Welcome back to Sound Effect here on 88.5 KNKX. I'm Jennifer Wing, and today all of our stories are about the pursuit in one way or another. Ted Griffin founded and operated Seattle's first aquarium, and he's the first person to swim publicly with an orca, Nemu, in 1965. He then captured, swam with, and sold dozens of whales to other aquariums. That practice is highly controversial now, and the participants are widely viewed as villains. But some historians think this needs a little context. For a long time, orcas were seen as a dangerous nuisance to fishermen. Jason Colby is a professor of ecological history at the University of Victoria, and he's working on a book about Griffin as a man who helped radically change how we see and protect these whales. Colby says at the time, the main MO for scientists looking to study a big marine mammal was to kill it and dissect its body.
The alternative was not between whale watching and whale catching. It was between whale killing and whale catching. The thing that made him strange in the eyes of many was that he was actually willing to go out and try to figure out a way to catch them alive, and even, you know, God forbid, to swim with them.
88.5's Bellamy Palethorpe wanted to know more about who Griffin is and what motivated him. He's 80 years old now, and he told her that growing up in Tacoma on the shores of Gravelly Lake, he'd spend hours watching life underwater.
And how did that evolve into this desire to capture and ride an orca whale years later?
Well, my neighbor had a horse, and he would ride it in the lake. And I thought, gee, I wish I could do that. And then one day I saw somebody riding a dolphin. That was Greek mythology, and it was on a coin. And I thought, I can do that. And it wasn't until later that I thought a whale would be more suitable.
And this became a truly deep-held dream of yours. It was like a vision that possessed you.
Probably something that few of us ever experienced, but my whole life was focused on getting in the water with a whale and swimming with a whale and making friends with it. And the things that I did, nobody in their right mind would have done. But to me, it was just a natural consequence of what I wanted more than anything in life. I wanted to be friends with that whale.
And so you achieved this eventually by, first you set up an aquarium on the Seattle waterfront, and this was like during the era of the World's Fair, and you started collecting sea life, and you didn't quite get the whale at first. It took a while.
Well, I put a sign over the door that had a picture of a whale. But the aquarium was built in 1962 during the World Fair, and I immediately began looking for killer whales and trying to figure out how to catch them. And I thought, well, I'll just jump out of the boat, put a lasso around, and I'll have him. This went on for 4 years. I did a lot of things that were really, I dare not tell you what they were about.
What do you mean?
I mean, when people jump out of boats and get in the water with live killer whales, and the whales swim away, but they think you're going to be eaten, they think you're absolutely crazy. And I ignored them. I knew that I could make friends with that whale. That was the most important thing in my life.
And so you hired helicopters, you had seaplanes, tugs out there. How much money and effort did you put into this before you succeeded?
Well, in those days, probably $30,000, $40,000, which I didn't have, but I spent it anyway. It's the modern way, you know, for spending money. At any rate, I thought, well, I'll jump out of the helicopter and make friends with the whale by getting alongside of him. But nothing seemed to work until one day, by accident, a whale was captured in a net, which I thought was impossible.
So ultimately, it was these fishermen up near the town of Namu in British Columbia. They accidentally trapped a whale in, or a couple of whales in a net.
I'd talked to fishermen for many years about catching whales in nets, and they all said the same thing. The whales will swim right through your net, and you can't hold them. And so when I got to the town of Namu and looked at the whales sitting behind a very lightweight gill net, I thought, well, then it can't be the strength of the net that's keeping them. It has to be something else.
What was it?
it turned out to be their echolocation, their ability to see the net with sound and think that it's a barrier they cannot get through.
Hmm. And so you had scrounged together $8,000. This was in 1965, and you had to give this money in cash to these fishermen in order to get them.
Well, scrounge is a polite word. I went to the waterfront merchants and pounded on the counter until they opened their safes and gave me money. And I told them that I would be back maybe with a whale. But I raised $8,000 on Sunday morning and flew to Canada and purchased the whale that day.
How did you convince them?
Well, they knew me as a waterfront character, if you will. I used to jump in the water with seals and sea lions and swim around in Elliott Bay. Sometimes the harbor tour boat would come by and I'd wave at him, and the people would say, I have to rescue this skin diver. And of course, I had an octopus draped over my back, and they'd pull me out and the octopus would come with me. That's the way it was. They all knew me.
So you got the $8,000 together, went there, and now you have this whale.
I then had to start how I'm going to get this whale out of the rock pock where he is stuck behind nets 400 miles back to Seattle. So we got back to Seattle after 19 days, and that was the beginning of the time I spent in the water with Namu. And it's kind of tricky. You think, if I do this, will a whale do something? Well, a whale seemed to enjoy my company. In fact, it got to the point where he wouldn't let me go. He wanted me to stick around all the time.
You became famous as the first man to ever swim with a killer whale in a public exhibition. It's a practice that became very popular. What was it like for you that first time?
Well, I want to say it was scary, but it wasn't. It was just, I was being cautious and careful, but I knew I could do it. I had so much drive and energy to get in the water and be with that whale and make friends with that whale. That's all I wanted in the world.
You did develop what you describe in your book, Namu, Quest for the Killer Whale, as a really deep connection, a deep relationship with this whale. How would you describe that?
I guess I have to say that in my way, I was in love with a whale. I was in love with a whale before, and I was in love with a whale when I actually got next to him. And when I realized that he knew me, he could tell me from other people, that he would come when I would call, that he would respond to my actions. If I gave him a signal, he would obey immediately. He seemed to want to please me. And at that point, the bond continued to grow.
What surprised you the most about your interaction with him?
Probably the most surprising thing was the lack of the whale's danger. You know, if you reach in the mouth and grab the tongue and the whale just backs up and won't bite down on your arm, and you leave an arm and a salmon in the whale's mouth and the whale somehow gets the salmon but doesn't bite the arm, you begin to wonder what is going on with this animal. Actually, what's going on with me?
And you would spend 12, 14 hours a day with him in the water.
Too long. I'd get out, I couldn't walk. My fingers were all rough. My skin diving suit was so sore I couldn't take it off. But I had to stay in the water until I was just about drowned.
And this went on for about a year, and then Namu got sick and died.
It went on for a long time. When I moved Namu back to Seattle after making a motion picture film, Namu, the whale was in Seattle on exhibit, and I swam with him several times a day. But he did get sick, and it turned out to be the polluted water of the Puget Sound, Elliott Bay. And he died from a poison called Clostridium. And as a result of that, that basically ended my relationship with that whale.
You fell into a bit of a depression afterwards, didn't you?
I never really got over the loss of the whale. And I have to be careful when I talk about it because I keep thinking it's yesterday or today or tomorrow. But I wanted to make friends with another whale, but it was not possible.
If you could talk to Namu, what would you tell him?
I'd come back. I'm still ready for you.
Ted Griffin talked with 88.5's Bellamy Palethorpe. Griffin went on to catch dozens more orcas, including an almost entire pod during the notorious Penn Cove capture in 1970. He and his partner provided orcas to aquariums all over the world. Some of their operations resulted in orca deaths, and they became lightning rods for controversy and animal rights activists who want all orcas released from captivity. Griffin says he has no regrets about what he did. He eventually got out of the business because he was never able to find the same connection with the whale like the one he had with Namu.